prevent regional solutions by pitting regional actors against each other, this is to the detriment both of the United States and the world.
We've been talking with Vijay Prashad, a professor of international studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, about the current situation in Iraq. Prashad is the author of 15 books, including the recent The Poorer Nations, A Possible History of the Global South, and The Darker Nations, A People's History of the Third World. This is Ken Jones with KBOO News.
Tune in Wednesday, August 13th at 2 p.m. when KBOO's Rita Rega will be talking to impresario George Ween, the creator of the Newport Jazz Festival. Listen to what this eyewitness to jazz history has to say about his festival and the film Jazz on a Summer's Day, playing Thursday, August 14th at the Clinton Street Theater. Again, that's George Ween, interviewed by KBOO's Rita Rega, Wednesday, August 13th, 2 p.m., here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Registration is now open for the Pacific Northwest Social Forum coming to Portland the weekend of September 26th through the 28th. The weekend will feature People's Movement assemblies on topics such as treaty rights, food sovereignty, housing justice, and more. The Social Forum will begin Friday, September 26th with the concert by KBOO Station co-manager Mike Crenshaw and friends. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of this important and historic event where we, the people, will create the Pacific Northwest Plan of Action for social, economic, and climate justice. Information about registration, endorsement, childcare, or on the Pacific Northwest Social Forum in general can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:02 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Labor Radio, so stay tuned.
Now, time for the bullet. Let's the bullet. Let's the bullet. Let's liberate radio. Time for the working. The clash is educate, organize, activate. Yeah, the time is now. Look up to the past, to the 30s. Yeah, to the sit down, to the strike. It's time to make things right. We've been taking it for far too long. Loud the labor movement getting real, real, real strong. We do the we got labor radio with your host, the Megan and Mayor.
Good evening. You're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO with your second Monday Labor Radio collective hosts, Megan and Mayor. With the whole world watching the massive attacks on Gaza, including the deaths of over 1,500 Palestinians, the majority of them civilians, we interviewed Michael Letwin with Labor for Palestine to get a sense of how U.S. workers can join the growing protest movement.
When workers in Palestine, like anywhere else, are calling for support against oppression and racism and injustice, it's incumbent on workers, trade unionists everywhere to stand up for them, especially when we live in a country that whose own government supplies the weapons and the money to kill people in Gaza and the West Bank and throughout the region.
By contrast, official governments and trade union organizations in Latin America have been, in many cases, the loudest in condemning the disproportionate violence taking place.
Es inaceptable, imperdonable, la intervención brutal de los gobernantes de Israel.
This is unacceptable, unforgivable, the brutal intervention of the Israeli government, because every tear, every drop of blood of the Palestinian people is the pain of the Bolivian people. That was Juan Carlos Trujillo of the Bolivian Workers Central, representing 2 million Bolivian workers and indigenous activists at one of two marches that took place last Friday in La Paz, Bolivia, in solidarity with the people of Palestine. Trujillo went on to say, because of this, our march has arrived here at the door of the U.S. Embassy. because North American imperialism is also behind this conflict. Las Fridays March is just one example of the incredible outpouring of support from Latin America towards the people of Gaza that has occurred in recent weeks. Also last week, the Uruguayan ambassador, Enrique Ribeiro, traveled to Ramallah in the West Bank to open the new Uruguayan embassy. Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Peru, and Venezuela also have embassies in Palestine. The move comes on the heels of the decision by Brazil, Chile, Ecuador, El Salvador, and Peru to recall their diplomatic envoys from Tel Aviv in response to the current escalation of tension between Israel and Gaza.
We're speaking to Michael Letwin, a longtime labor and social justice organizer, and currently an organizer for the group Labor for Palestine. And we're doing this for KBOO Labor Radio, which is a labor radio collective that runs on Mondays in Portland, Oregon. And we're really excited to be talking to you and finding out more about you and the group Labor for Palestine, as well as what's going on in Palestine right now. So if you could tell us about, just first about what the group is itself, Labor for Palestine, and how you personally became involved in the movement, and then we can maybe start talking about other specifics on the ground.
Well, I've been an anti-apartheid activist for pretty much my whole life and was active in the divestment movement and support for the anti-apartheid movement during South African times. And in 2004, about 10 years ago, we set up a group called Labor for Palestine. I was a union president at that time for the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, UAW Local 2325. And in my individual capacity, I was one of the co-founders of New York City Labor Against the War. Through New York City Labor Against the War, together with Al Auda New York, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition, the two organizations jointly set up Labor for Palestine. And the idea is to support the calls from Palestine by trade unions and others to support Palestinian rights and to oppose Israeli apartheid, and in particular, to call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, not only from companies and so forth, which is part of the broader movement, and for an end, of course, to all U.S. weapons for Israel, but in particular, to call on American trade unions and other trade unions, but especially in this country, to stop the support that their leaderships show for the Israeli apartheid system.
Why is this such a big issue for U.S. workers? If you could talk a little bit about the conditions in Palestine, both during active sieges like what we're seeing now, but also in general for workers and unions, if there are any that protect Palestinian workers.
Israeli apartheid is really a system, just as South African apartheid was a system, and just as racism in many countries is a system. And the way it works in throughout historic Palestine, by which I mean not only the areas occupied since 1967 of Gaza and the West Bank, but all of historic Palestine, which has been occupied since the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948. And in that system, you really have three different tiers of oppression. One tier, again, is the 1967 occupation. And that's what, to the extent that people are aware of there being an oppressive Israeli policy, it's usually in regard to those territories, and certainly those are prime examples of that oppression. However, it's not just the 1967 territories, it's the position of the 20% within what the Israeli state calls Israel, who are in fact Palestinians, one out of five people. And then you have the third, and perhaps by far the largest group of Palestinians, the third tier, which is the Palestinian refugee population. 70% of the Palestinian population around the world, 7 out of 10 million people, are refugees, largely from 1948, when the Nakba took place, the catastrophe through which the Israeli state was established, and since that time, and continues to be not only generated new refugees all the time from the growing, constantly growing settlements, but going all the way back to that first creation of refugees in 1948, and that refugee population and their descendants now live in refugee camps around the region, in Syria and Lebanon and Jordan, and for that matter, even in the West Bank and Gaza. Because what a lot of people don't know is that Gaza, which now holds 1.8 million people in what is a very small area, 80% of that population are refugees from 1948 Palestine. And in fact, the Israeli villagers that complain about the rockets coming in, occasionally coming nearby where they live, are all built on villages, Palestinian villages, that were destroyed in 1948. So the point is that there are these different aspects of the Israeli apartheid system, and within that, the working class obviously experiences it differently. In the 1967 areas, there are unions, with the PGFTU and other worker organizations, but the conditions in the West Bank, for example, are characterized not only by being sealed into the West Bank, but also by a system of checkpoints and division within the West Bank. So there are 500 checkpoints or more within the West Bank itself that separate and divide up the Palestinian population. Workers have to try to navigate that just to get to work, those who are lucky enough to have a job. Some of them work, have to work on Israeli settlements because that's the only work there is under this system. And they may be members of unions, but those unions have no bargaining rights or any kind of real rights in regards to employment. In the 1948 territories, that's what the Palestinians call what the Israelis call Israel. In those areas, workers often are members of their own organizations. But again, they have very limited power in regards to the state because the state has really tried to limit Palestinian labor to a very subservient position. And then, of course, you have the 70% of the population that's all around the world, including throughout the region. And in that, people experience work in different ways. But the Palestinian unions do exist, and they have called, like the rest of Palestinian society, for the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement. They helped to found that in the 2005 statement that created the official BDS movement. They are calling today, for example, for support against the ongoing massacres that are taking place by the Israeli regime, armed and funded by the United States and its allies, and unfortunately funded as well by the leaderships of our own unions. And we're here to really respond to that, to say we're with you, we support BDS, and we're going to try to call attention to the fact that workers do not necessarily support what American trade union leaders are doing. And in fact, we hope that workers eventually will emulate the doctors around the world and even in Oakland, California, who at various points have refused to handle Israeli cargo.
So what is it that workers specifically, trade union members specifically, you talked a little bit about dock workers. Do you have more examples like that of things that people can do, both workplace actions or if there's any other ways that individual members, but also the unions they belong in, any other ways that we can pull the support?
One is we're asking for people to sign on to Labor for Palestine's recent statement. It's called Trade Union SA, Stop the War on Gaza. No arms for apartheid Israel, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And you can find that on Facebook, Labor for Palestine on Facebook. It'll direct you to the change.org site where we have several hundred people, more than 600 people have signed that so far. And we're hoping that people will support that as well. We also are calling on workers, as I mentioned, to emulate dockers in South Africa, India, Sweden, Norway, Turkey, the U.S. West Coast, and elsewhere by refusing whenever possible to handle military or any other cargo destined for Israel. And we're asking for people to, union members, to bring resolutions in their own labor organizations. And we have, in fact, a model Labor for Palestine resolution along these lines, calling on labor bodies to divest from Israel bonds and to cut ties with the Histadrut, which is Israel's official and, frankly, racist labor federation. Not only racist in terms of the role it plays in labor in particular, which is certainly the case, but the fact is that one of the reasons that American unions, for example, American union leaderships, one of the things they hang their hat on in supporting the Israeli regime is that Israeli labor organizations have always been in the forefront of Israeli apartheid. And in fact, going back decades before there even was an Israeli state, into the 1920s, the Histadrut and other labor Zionist organizations became known as the state-in-waiting for Zionism. And they were the ones who gave rise to people like Golda Meir and David Ben-Gurion, who were the early leaders of the Israeli regime, and who came out of this labor Zionist movement. Unfortunately, the leaderships of many trade unions in this country feel comfortable with that sort of thing. But it gives really a labor face, sort of a false labor face, if you will, to the establishment of the Israeli apartheid system. And so it's very important to demand that unions call on our own unions to stop investing in those bonds, the State of Israel bonds, and to cut the ties with the Histadrut, which is really the international organization that coordinates trade union support for Israel. And more generally, I think it's very important that workers identify themselves as members of unions in becoming involved in the broader BDS movement, which is now, again, taking off, unfortunately, as a result of the ongoing massacres in Gaza. because it's really been Gaza that first in 08-09 with Operation Cast Lead and all the way through today, these periodic and really genocidal attacks on the people of Palestine and the working people of Palestine that have generated the growing support for the BDS movement, or at least have been the main reason, I would say, that the BDS movement is growing so quickly.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, streaming online at kboo.fm. Now back to our interview with Michael Letwin of Labor for Palestine.
What kind of inspiration or advice would you give to, I think, a lot of our listeners and a lot of other rank and file members? How do you go about becoming an expert on this? How do you go about the first steps in winning over people in your union?
I think the way to see it is that it's a difficult challenge. However, there's more room than you might think to at least raise the issue, depending on the union that you're in. And I've seen this develop over the years where, 10 years ago, it seemed to many people almost impossible to bring it up in a union. And even today, the leaderships of all of our international unions in this country oppose the BDS movement and are on board with apartheid Israel. And that's really to their shame and to their discredit. But it's going to come from below. Just like all things in labor that have happened for the good have come from below. It doesn't mean it'll happen quickly. It doesn't mean it'll be a mass movement overnight. For example, what you see even today is that a growing number of people are not only signing this statement, but at least in a few unions, and this is the beginning, the rank and file has taken the lead in some places in creating support for BDS. So, for example, in 2010, ILWU Local 10, the dockers in Oakland, refused to handle Israeli cargo. And that move came from below. That was a one-time thing so far. I mean, it hasn't happened routinely, but it opened the door to the idea of it happening again. In more recent times, sort of almost randomly, you have a local of the United Electrical Workers, number 150 in North Carolina, that has just adopted a resolution in support of BDS and which has endorsed our statement. Another union that has a local leadership that has really taken the lead in this is that of UAW Local 2865, which represents 13,000 grad student employees at the University of California. Just in the last couple of weeks, their joint council, which is their leadership body statewide, has adopted a resolution and will propose that there be a membership vote on the issue of boycott, divestment, and sanctions in response to the most recent Gaza massacres. And interestingly, they have a very sophisticated analysis. It's not simply we don't like the violence, although of course it is that, but it locates that violence in what they call the settler colonial state of Israel. That passed nearly unanimously, and many of its supporters are, in fact, Jewish. So I think once those cracks begin to develop, then those of us in other unions have something to point to as kind of precedent to say, look, they're doing this there, and this is what they're saying, and this is the information they're presenting in support of it. And so maybe we can at least get a discussion going in our local or our union about the same thing, and perhaps even citing the resolution in the other union to say, look, they've raised this. This is why they're saying this. This is the facts behind what they're saying. And why don't we have a similar discussion here? And resolutions can play a role in doing that, so that even if we don't win the resolution at this point in a particular union, it nonetheless can help generate the discussion. The leaderships of most unions will not go for that, just as they don't go for much else that comes from the rank and file. But it's a way of trying to do that. And I think it's important in doing that and helpful in doing that to locate the support for BDS is part of a movement against racism and oppression more generally. And to make the analogies between the Jim Crow South and South African apartheid, and for that matter, the mass incarceration and kind of racism that we experience today in this country. And I think, therefore, that workers of color will be particularly receptive, although others will be as well. It'll be a minority in the beginning, but the point is to start where we are, to build a base and to enlarge that base by winning people over. So it's going to depend on a particular union that you're in and where you are, but we've been able to try to build those connections and those alliances to fight this forward. And I think the argument that we've made about, that you referred to earlier, you asked about, well, why is this even important to workers, or why should it be important to workers or union members in this country? That's what we try to address. And what we argue is that solidarity is the byword of labor, or should be. And that an injury to one is an injury to all, or should be, and that when workers in Palestine, like anywhere else, are calling for support against oppression and racism and injustice, it's incumbent on workers, trade unionists everywhere to stand up for them, especially when we live in a country that whose own government supplies the weapons and the money to kill people in Gaza and the West Bank and throughout the region, especially when it's our own union leaderships, unfortunately, who are helping to fund that same kind of genocidal apartheid system. And that those are the alliances that we need to make with workers around the world against oppression and injustice, just as we would like their support when we fight the same kinds of things.
I take it that you're drawing on some experience as well with the fight against South African apartheid. Do you have any insights on what United States labor's role was then? Are you drawing inspiration from that movement? Are there similarities or differences?
There are similarities and there are differences. And yes, we draw inspiration from it. And I think the Palestinian-led BDS movement draws inspiration, among other places, from the divestment movement against apartheid South Africa. I should say that, you know, it also draws inspiration from Palestinian resistance going back many, many decades, well before the establishment of the Israeli regime. But in this country, labor, official labor even, much earlier on, took a more formally supportive role of the anti-apartheid movement, partly because times were different and it felt the pressure of the civil rights and black power movement to take positions like that, and partly because there wasn't as strong a pro-apartheid constituency, certainly not within the labor movement. To the extent there would have been, it would have come under the guise of anti-communism, which saw apartheid South Africa as an ally against the left, basically, around the world and against various rivals of the United States. But eventually, major unions in this country, including my own union, the UAW, and certainly the public sector workers, by the 80s or the early 1990s, many of them were supporting that divestment movement, at least on paper. The Israeli regime was closely allied with South African apartheid regime, and they had a very strong economic and especially a military relationship. So there is a long connection in terms of parallels between South African and Israeli apartheid. And by the same token, many of us who were involved, who are old enough at this point to have been involved in the South African anti-apartheid movement, also now are activists for the same kinds of reasons in the movement against Israeli apartheid. But I think the more we're able, again, to draw the parallels between the two movements, and in fact, the two regimes that we're talking about, the easier it becomes to make the case why apartheid is wrong. It was wrong then. It's wrong now. It was wrong in South Africa. It's wrong in the United States. It's wrong in Israel and throughout historic Palestine. And therefore, just as we called for one person, one vote in South African, in apartheid South Africa, and we called for it in the Jim Crow South in this country, we're calling for the same thing in support of Palestinians throughout historic Palestine, and that there should be the various things that BDS is calling for, which is an end to the 1967 occupation, including the current war on Gaza and the ongoing wars on Gaza. There should be equal rights for the Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, and there should be the right of return for all Palestinian refugees. And in my own view, what that really means is not only an end to the entire apartheid regime in Israel, but really the kind of, you know, democratic society that one would hope would exist everywhere.
Well, thank you. I've been speaking with Michael Letwin, who is an organizer with Labor for Palestine. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time out of what's a busy weekend with the Day of Rage and so many other events going on, an outpouring of support for Gaza in the belly of the beast in the United States. And I hope that you continue the work you're doing. And our listeners also want to get updates. So for them, the best website, I believe, is laborforpalestine.net.
That's it.
Excellent.
And again, we're on Facebook. I just want to also finally mention that there is an event in Oakland and elsewhere on August 16th, but especially in Oakland, to picket Israeli ships that are coming in. It's called the Zim Lines, Z-I-M. There'll be solidarity actions in New York City and elsewhere. And we very much look forward to hearing from everyone who's concerned with this issue.
And thank you, Mayor, for that great interview with Michael Letwin of Labor for Palestine. You are listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. And now we'll switch gears to highlight a local campaign with a lot of heart. We're speaking with Haley of United Campaign Workers, who is part of an active organizing drive here in Portland. Haley, welcome to Labor Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell a little bit about where you work and how you guys are organizing?
Yeah, I work at Grassroots Campaigns Incorporated. Grassroots Campaigns street canvasses on a variety of progressive organizations. Right now we're doing the Planned Parenthood Action Fund and the Nature Conservancy. And the reason why we're organizing, well, there's many reasons, but a big part of it is that there's an exceptionally high turnover rate, and the quota for these campaigns is beyond what the organizations expect to raise. We also were not getting sick pay, which is required by Portland law. A coworker of mine was actually working with a concussion, and she requested a sick pay leave, and we brought it to their attention that it was the law, and she was still denied it. But luckily, since we've organized, they have recognized the fact that this is Portland law, so that's something that we have gotten out of this as good. But a lot of people's jobs are at risk here, and they have a very confusing pay structure. When you ask questions about pay, they're evasive, and it's just a very disrespectful environment to work in. Our boss laughs about firing people and essentially brags about it. We just want more respect as workers, and we want a reasonable quota. We have very reasonable demands, and we really just want our employers to negotiate with us, but at this point, they're refusing to negotiate.
So what can our Labor Radio listeners do to support you guys?
Definitely visit the United Campaign Workers Facebook page to keep updated on future rallies and phone blasts and other escalations that we're going to be doing in order to pressure grassroots campaigns into negotiating with us and just hearing what their workers have to say.
Well, thank you for being part of Labor Radio, Haley.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Solidarity.
You've been listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. You can find this episode and more resources from tonight's program on KBOO.FM. To play us out, the song Gaza by David Rovix.
$1.8 million people surrounded on all sides, refugees since 48, since 67 occupied. The only reason they're not starving is down to the UN. Most have never left, they're stuck in the lion's den, the most crowded place on earth, and there they'll stay. They can't visit cousins half hour's drive away. Drones overhead constantly. Who will die tomorrow? A daily mystery in Gaza. The settlers moved out, the fighter jets moved in. In Gaza, there's just no way that you can win. You can't take out a copter with an antiquated gun. You're just a target sitting in the sun, waiting for your death to come raining from the sky, where the end really is nigh. You can hear a sonic boom and see a flashing light every hour of the day, every hour of the night in Gaza. There are no shelters, nowhere you can hide. Life is nothing like it is on the other side. There's nothing post about the traumatic stress. There's never more, usually less. And still some people wonder, they insist on asking why anyone would be so mad as to reply, so mad as to think that it might make sense to lob some missiles over the fence from Gaza. From Gaza. From Gaza.
for our annual book and record sale coming soon, and we are accepting donations now. The sale will be held sometime this fall at the Volunteers of America building, 537 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. The book and record sale is a great way to help contribute to your community. So do us and yourself a favor. Clear out those books, comics, DVDs, VHS tapes, LPs, and CDs collecting dust around your abode and bring them down to the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, during our business hours. Got questions? Contact Jesse at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or online via email, volunteer@kboo.org. Remember, the stuff that you're sick of, others may treasure. Turn your clutter into cash for your community radio station, KBOO.
What a life. 210 days of school until next vacation.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Washington Gorge Action Program's Back to School fundraiser, August 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Columbia Gorge Interpretive Center, 990 Rock Creek Drive in Stevenson, Washington. There will be a fashion show, live music, a silent auction, and dessert social. Washington Gorge Action Programs is a multi-purpose human service organization dedicated to helping individuals, families, and communities address basic human needs. Again, that's the Washington Gorge Action Programs Back to School fundraiser, August 23rd at the Columbia Gorge Interpretive Center, 990 Rock Creek Drive in Stevenson, Washington. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding.